Welcome to Advance Rutgers, a podcast about the many ways that Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey, is addressing the critical issues of our day. At Rutgers, we believe a better tomorrow starts with bigger thinking today. And our talented and driven community is improving the human condition with transformative, multidisciplinary projects. This podcast will explore those groundbreaking initiatives, what they are, why they matter, and who they benefit. This episode features Dr. Shin-Chi Dong. Dr. Dong is a nationally renowned geriatrician. He's the director of the Institute for Health, Healthcare Policy, and Aging Research at Rutgers Biomedical and Health Sciences. And he's the champion for the Rutgers Center for Healthy Aging. This episode also brings you the story of one family. Their experience highlights the urgent need for more patient-centered research for older adults and the struggle that millions of caregivers go through to care for their loved ones. I'm your host and producer, Christine Fennessy. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, this is so hard. My mom was my best friend. So I was definitely one of those really lucky women to be able to say that my mom and I were buds all through life. We never went through a phase where I screamed, "I hate you," as a teenager or anything like that.
That's Steph O'Keefe. She's 40 years old and her mom is Kay. In pictures, they look like twins. They have the same shoulder-length brown hair and big friendly smile. Kay used to be a commercial artist and a volunteer at her kids' schools. She sewed costumes for plays and altered the band's uniforms.
And she was so very kind. She just epitomized kindness and generosity. Every time I ever had friends over in school, she wanted them to come to our house. She wanted to feed them. She wanted to host the sleepovers. She wanted to be a part of everything. And she was just so much fun.
In 2011, something strange started happening to Kay. She did calligraphy, and so her handwriting had always been meticulous.
But she was helping me address envelopes one time, and I noticed that her writing was leaning down strangely, and sometimes she'd even get letters wrong or mixed up. And then I also noticed some other things, like she used to be a really good seamstress, and I asked her to do a project for me, and she couldn't figure it out. And she was too embarrassed to even tell me about it, so she hired somebody to do it.
Kay had always kept her house spotless, too, but she stopped cleaning.
Our house was so clean growing up, you could eat off of our floor, and I would go visit, and it would be dirty, and the bathroom would be dirty.
3 years later, Kay was diagnosed with posterior cortical atrophy, a rare form of Alzheimer's. It was her 59th birthday. People with PCA lose cognitive functioning, but this disease has a terrible twist.
And one of the first things to go is your vision. It doesn't mean that you're blind in the sense that you've lost your sight, but what it means is that your brain is not recognizing what your eyes are telling it.
Soon, Kay couldn't read, she couldn't write, and she couldn't dress herself. But in the beginning, she would try. Steph remembers one day in particular.
She was being very stubborn, and she didn't want my help getting dressed, so I just stood there and let her try to do it herself, and she put her underwear on her head.
Kay's brain was essentially turning her own eyes against her.
We stopped watching television with her because she would actually start to think that the things on the screen were real or in her room. And then she'd have hallucinations or paranoia based on that because she couldn't distinguish reality from a screen.
In the early days of her diagnosis, Kay could stay home alone during the day. Steph's dad was still too young to retire. Meals on Wheels delivered her lunch and checked in on her.
What ended up happening was literally overnight, she went from being fine on her own to needing 24/7 care.
It was a late morning in November 2015. Meals on Wheels had just pulled up, and that's when they saw Kay.
And she was banging on the windows, screaming for help because she thought that she was trapped. She didn't know where she was, and she was begging for someone to let her out.
Steph and her dad used up all their vacation and family leave time, so one of them was always with Kay. A month later, they made a decision.
We figured out that it was going to cost our family so much more money if we either hired a private nurse or hired a company to come in to take care of her or put her in a facility. And so we just decided as a family that I would quit my job. My husband and my dad would help support us, and we essentially pooled resources. So I started taking care of her in 2015, and I have been one of her full-time caregivers ever since.
Caregivers like Steph and her dad carry a heavy burden, physical, emotional, financial. Dr. Xinqi Dong understands that burden.
My name is Xinqi Dong. I'm a geriatrician by training and a population epidemiologist, and I direct the Institute for Health, Healthcare Policy, and Aging Research. And I am the lead person for the Center for Healthy Aging.
Dr. Dong grew up in China. He became his grandparents' full-time caregiver when he was 13. He remembers the first time that he saw them as frail.
When the village was torn down because of urbanization, we moved to the very distant suburban areas. And having seen them climbing a flight of stairs, for example, and having to go much further distance to the grocery store or carrying a much heavier sack of rice, was really the first time I saw them being frail in a way that I had not seen them before.
Caring for his grandparents wasn't easy, but at the time, he didn't see it as work. He says it was simply part of his filial obligation.
My typical day will be helping them go to the bathroom first thing in the morning and clean the in-house urinals, if you will, to the local toilet, because we didn't have private bathrooms in our house, and preparing for breakfast. And we didn't have much in terms of working refrigerator or stove of that sort. And I think cooking was cumbersome, but I think dealing with activity is a daily living, getting them to take a bath. That was physically hard. Having to boil enough hot water so they can be next to the wooden bath thing that we had, the wooden bathtub in the middle of the room, and we would balance the water so that they can clean up.
And then he'd have to go to school.
You know, I would ride my bicycle an hour each way to go to my high school. So it was quite a bit of a distance. And having to deal with that in between everything else I had to do academically, I think that was challenging.
Dr. Dong says that experience probably had something to do with him becoming a geriatrician. But there's more to it than that.
I think I've always enjoyed interacting with older adults. I think that in general, that's a population that I enjoy taking care of.
He also did home visits when he was in medical school, and they had a big impact on him. They gave him a lot of insight into the day-to-day struggles that older adults face.
It's very easy for us to label patients as non-compliant. But when you have someone with a COPD or asthma and who lives in a place that have carpets that cannot be cleaned for whatever reason, you understand why the inhalers doesn't work, as opposed to saying, did you use the inhalers the right way? So I think those experiences plus others make me much more committed to the care of older adults as a geriatric physician.
And his commitment, it extends beyond the patient.
I think to be a good geriatrician, you cannot just be a good clinician. You have to take care of not just older adults, but their families as well. And I think coming from a Chinese culture, a family-oriented culture, it's very much a root of my upbringing. It's just a root of what I see as important in taking care of older adults.
And that's why, he says, the Rutgers Center for Healthy Aging will have an intergenerational approach to health and well-being. The Center for Healthy Aging will expand and standardize care for older adults, and that's vital because the U.S. is aging fast. By 2035, Americans over 65 will outnumber those under 18. And that demographic shift will bring a lot of challenges. Dr. Dong sees the center addressing those challenges in multiple ways. First, it'll be a hub for information.
I think the Center for Healthy Aging holds the promise to really broaden that network of community partners, family, and caregivers in a way that can keep them connected, sharing resources, sharing information, sharing best practices.
Second, it'll advance the science around aging issues by taking an interdisciplinary approach to research.
You know, if you have a problem, how would a geriatric physician, a social worker, a sociologist, an anthropologist, a mathematician tackle the same problem in a way that are unique and innovative?
And finally, it'll keep families, clinicians, healthcare workers, and policymakers updated on its research,
so that they can understand what are the best practices in terms of the way to take care of older adults that are unique, that are respectful, that are linguistic and culturally appropriate, and that are patient-centered.
The center will be part of Rutgers Institute for Health, Healthcare Policy, and Aging Research. Its infrastructure will be spread throughout New Jersey. And the state is one of the wealthiest in the country. But when it comes to health-related rankings, it's near the bottom. In fact, New Jersey ranks 34th for preventable hospitalizations, 48th in primary care providers to populations, and 50th for hospital admissions. Dr. Dong says the state has some of the worst health disparities in the country. So how did we get here?
I'm not sure I can fully answer that question, but I can try. When you look at the New Jersey demographics, there's a very rapid growing of older adult population. There's a very large group of immigrant population in New Jersey. New Jersey is incredibly diverse, even though it's one of the smaller states and the second wealthiest states per capita. We rank in third in the country in terms of percent of immigrants for the state population. So it's a small state with a large immigrant population with increasingly growth of aging population. And the setting is also very diverse. We have Jersey City and Newark, much more urban areas. And then we have also a lot of rural areas in New Jersey as well. So access may not be as readily available. And I think that's in part what we are at the Institute trying to understand is that what makes those metrics so terrible? What makes the disparities so different? You can go from Princeton to Trenton, just about a dozen mile away, there's more than a decade difference in life expectancy.
The data isn't in yet, so Dr. Dong and his colleagues don't know what exactly is causing the disparities. But a few things are clear. For one, there aren't enough medical professionals.
In New Jersey, for example, there's an incredible shortage of geriatric physicians and geriatric psychiatrists. And so on one hand, there's increasing aging population. On the other hand, there's increasing disease burden because of longer life expectancy.
That burden includes dementia, disability, incontinence, fall, depression, family violence, all very difficult and time-intensive to care for.
In a traditional clinical visit, you have 15, 20 minutes to go through all of the medical issues. And if you pile those geriatric syndromes in addition to that, most physicians are simply not equipped to handle the complexity nor the time to be able to deal with those issues.
There's also a lack of evidence-based research.
If you present a frail patient to a cardiologist, to a gastroenterologist, to a pulmonologist, to a geriatric physician, you likely have different approaches in terms of the way you care for that older adult. Finding the evidence-based research in terms of best way to care for older adults is something where there's a vast research gap, not only in the state of New Jersey, but across the country as well.
And that gap has repercussions for patients and for caregivers. Dr. Dong recently participated in a consensus study from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. It reviewed the research on caregivers for older adults with dementia.
In short, the recommendation stems that although we have some promising evidence that may be ready for dissemination, vast majority of the areas, we still have great gaps in our understanding of how to support caregivers in this role. And this is after three decades of research on understanding caregivers.
He says caring for those with dementia is especially hard. It's not just about managing cognitive decline, but managing hallucinations, wandering, paranoia, and combativeness.
In many ways, people with disease such as diabetes or COPD, it's more about chronic disease management. But for older adults with dementia, it's not just the memory or physical disability that they encounter, but many of the other aspects, psychological, psychiatric manifestations that make us so much more challenging.
The Rutgers Center for Healthy Aging will fill these gaps. It'll help train the next generation of aging professionals, and it will bring researchers, clinicians, and scientists together to develop evidence-based best practices for older adults and their caregivers. Steph became her mother's full-time caregiver in December 2015. By spring, Kay didn't recognize her, and Steph's kind and patient best friend was now often angry and afraid.
She even told me that I was mean and I was a horrible person and nobody would be my friend because I was terrible for following her around and trying to boss her around and make her do things. And no matter how many times I told her I was her daughter and I loved her, she did not believe me.
Kay needed help with eating, getting dressed, showering. A single trip to the toilet could take 30 minutes. When Steph told her mother to pull her pants down, she pulled them up. It got harder when Steph got pregnant. When her mom got scared and tried to push her away, she worried about her belly. She took 1 month off after Harvey was born. Then she was back, baby in tow. One day, she put Harvey down for a nap and figured she had plenty of time to give her mom a shower.
There was just a little step that she had to step up and over to get into the shower. And it was really difficult to try to get her in there, to sit her down in a shower chair and then shower her and bathe her. She needed all of my help to do that. And then when she was done, she couldn't figure out how to get out. And I couldn't get her standing up and I couldn't get her walking out of the shower. And my son woke up.
He was screaming.
And I had to make a really difficult choice. And the choice was that I had to leave him. I had to let him lay there and scream because I knew that at least he was safe where he was. But if I left her, she was not safe.
Steph and her husband and son soon moved in with her parents. Her mom's needs were growing, money was tight, and she was so worried about her dad.
So he did the morning shifts. He went to work all day. He came home, he did the evening shifts, and many, many nights he didn't sleep because she was anxious or upset and she wasn't sleeping. And he was so worried about what would happen to her if she got up and got out of bed or wandered. And he was starting to look gray. And there were so many days that I would tiptoe into the house in the morning and look around and worry about where he was. If I didn't hear him right away, I would think, please don't let me find my dad. Please don't let me find my dad, because I was really afraid he was going to have a heart attack or something first.
Moving in helped. Her dad started eating better, exercising. He lost weight.
And it really, really helped to have the baby in the house. Honestly, I don't know how we would have survived if we hadn't had that baby, because he brought, I'm going to cry now, but he brought so much joy to everybody's life. And as we were losing so much from her, he was gaining so much and bringing so much to us that I just don't know how any of us would have gotten through it without him as part of the journey.
They've been through so much. There's the financial stress. Steph's dad had to retire early, and her husband's salary had to support them all. There's the physical toll. Steph hurt her back lifting her mom. But the loss has been the worst.
When your loved one who's older is losing all of these abilities and becoming what people often describe as childlike, it is so very different because there is no joy in any of those moments. So when your baby takes its first step, or when your baby says its first word, there's so much joy and excitement. But when your mom takes her last step and then is wheelchair bound, or when your mom starts having what we call word salad, where she's talking and saying words, but none of it makes any sense, there is so much pain and loss and desperation around that, that it's horrifying because you can't do anything.
There was something else too, something Steph didn't see coming. There's a stigma around Alzheimer's. It scares people. They don't know what to say or what to do. So friends and family vanish. Steph says They felt trapped.
We couldn't do the things that normal people did. We couldn't go out to dinner. We couldn't go to movies. We couldn't take our son to the children's museum. We couldn't plan outings as a family because we couldn't leave. And we didn't have anybody else that could come and spell us or take care of us.
They only had each other, and that was really hard.
You know, even a phone call would have helped. Even a phone call to say, how are you doing? Tell me about your day. Is there anything I can bring you? I'm making a batch of cookies. Can I bring you a few? Even something like that would have made all the difference in the world, just to acknowledge our existence and acknowledge what we were going through.
It took a while, but Steph and her family found a way out of their loneliness. They joined support groups and built a new community. They found the Mary Poppins of caregiving. That's what Steph calls the woman who gets passed along from family to family, who lost both her parents to dementia and Alzheimer's, and now goes wherever she's needed most. She cares for Kay several times a week and gives Steph and her dad respite. Dr. Dong says the Rutgers Center for Healthy Aging will support caregivers like Steph and her dad. It will connect them with resources, with community organizations, advocacy organizations, and healthcare systems. And it will encourage them to get involved with research.
So we can really follow their trajectory of change over time, understand what really causes what.
He says the center will also empower them
to think about how their voices can influence practice and policy. How do we adapt our healthcare system to be more caregiver friendly? And using the research that we conduct, link them to policymakers so that their voices can be heard in the legislations and in the policies that we may advocate for.
And finally, when research at the center reveals best practices, patients and their families won't have to wait to learn about them and use them.
On average, it takes too long for research that are conducted to be disseminated into the community and to become a standard practice of care. And I think we really want to shorten that cycle.
Dr. Dong has devoted his life to the care of older adults and to their families. He understands how hard it can be to just make it through the day. And he wants people like Steph to feel hope.
I think giving caregiver a sense of hope is really important. And I think for them to understand that there are people, there are researchers, there are clinicians, and there are advocates out there to really fight for a better life for older adults, as well as the caregivers that they live with.
Kay is now 67. She sleeps almost 20 hours a day. She doesn't talk. She rarely opens her eyes. And she can only move the fingers on her right hand. Harvey is 5. When he gives her a hug, which he does a lot, Steph places her mother's arms around him. Steph and her dad are still her caregivers. So would a Center for Healthy Aging help a family like hers? She says it would, especially having all those experts coming together from different fields to solve the really hard problems of dementia.
I think that also occupational therapists and physical therapists and psychologists and counselors, there could be a whole slew of people that could be really helpful to this. I mean, heck, even people skilled in early childhood development might have some tips and ideas that could help.
What would also be a big help is the center's promise to share resources, information, and community.
I think that we need to help each other so that people don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. And I think that more community resources, especially community programs that have volunteers that can come for free to just sit and read to your loved one for an hour so you can go to the grocery store, those kinds of things are absolutely vital, because even an hour can make a huge difference for someone who hasn't left their house for 4 days.
The past 8 years have been hard on her family. But for Steph, there's still hope and there's still joy.
Rather than grieving the woman that I've lost and am losing, I'm able to look back at the mom I had and start to remember things from my childhood or my teenage years or my early adulthood. And those are beautiful memories and lots of laughter and lots of good times. And those keep me going. So yes, it's painful to lose your mom. No girl should have to lose her mom. It's the worst ever. But we survive, right? And she taught me everything I needed to know. So it's going to be okay.
That's it for today's show. I'd like to thank Dr. Xinqi Dong and Steph O'Keefe for their time, their insight, and for their stories. Music in this episode is by Epidemic Sound. And you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Multidisciplinary projects like the Rutgers Center for Healthy Aging embody the innovative drive of Rutgers, New Jersey's academic, health, and research powerhouse. Join us next time as we explore more initiatives that will better the world.